Penguin Random House presents Duryodhanization. Are villains born, made, or made up? By Nishant Uppal. Read by Derek Denzel. To Sukhdeep, Papa. Vihan and Kabir, Sons. Preface. A reader quick, keen and leery, did wonder, ponder and query. When results clean and tight, fit predictions just right, if the data preceded the theory. Anonymous. It gives me immense pleasure to introduce this book, Duryodhanization, to my esteemed readers. This book attempts to explain the process involved in the making of a villain. It uses Duryodhan, a popular villain from the epic Mahabharata, as the central character to understand the process, thus the title Duryodhanization. Although there are several famous villains in the world, in literature and in the Mahabharata itself, the character Duryodhan is especially intriguing. Thousands of versions of the Mahabharata, as well as books focusing on some of its characters, have been written over the centuries. None of them show Duryodhan in a positive light. The Bhagavad Gita from the Mahabharata clearly states that every individual has Daivi, or good, and Asuri, or bad, qualities. However, there is nothing positive about Duryodhan's character in the Mahabharata. And this epic is considered to be the longest poem ever written, with over 2 lakh lines and 18 lakh words. This is surprising and worth exploring further. Following is a brief, chapter-wise description of the book. This is for the reader to understand the premise, purpose, and conception of the book. Chapter 1 introduces the concept of the making of a villain. I use multiple theoretical lenses to decipher whether villains are born, nurtured, or merely made up. I use theories from a range of academic disciplines such as psychology, genetic sciences, sociology, economics, etymology, history, and management to get a clearer understanding of the central concept of the book. Seminal research work, historical and modern, has been considered while exploring the process of Duryodhanization. Chapter 2 defines some commonly acknowledged psychological dispositions. These include Machiavellianism, narcissism, neuroticism, psychopathy, and sadism, which make a villain a negative character, a person. It also hypothesizes that these traits can be genetically transmitted and are contagious. I again use theories from various disciplines to support my arguments. In Chapter 3, we explore our central character, Duryodhan. I use various scientifically valid methodologies to analyze his actions as presented in the Mahabharata. I further map those actions along with the 5 negative dispositions described in the previous chapter. Subsection 1, 2 and 3 in this chapter look at Duryodhan's family tree. Examining the possibilities of genetic transmission of the 5 negative dispositions into Duryodhan. For this, I analyze the actions of Duryodhan's ancestors and map them along the negative dispositions mentioned above. And here, we find some remarkable linkages between the two. It clearly establishes how genetics influenced Duryodhan's behavior throughout his life. While it is clear that genetics played a significant role in determining Duryodhan's character, there are other possible explanations. In Chapter 4, I examine the behavior of other important characters in the Mahabharata, such as the Pandava brothers and Draupadi. I list several actions of the Pandavas that are very similar to Duryodhan's. However, they are treated differently in the epic, and thereafter by other readers and writers. While it seems unfair, the various explanations and justifications of the war between good and evil are what makes the epic so interesting. Chapter 5 explores the possibilities of generalizing of the concept of Duryodhanization. I choose characters, living and dead, and juxtapose them with the findings of the book. I have chosen these characters with utmost care to avoid hurting the sentiments of any community. Finally, in the last chapter, I conclude my theories and arguments. Only here do I allow my personal views on the subject to come forth. I believe this book will appeal to the curiosity of those who wish to scientifically understand the characterization of heroes or villains, be it in mythology, history, behavioral sciences, or real life. It also has teachings for businesses, academia, and policy organizations, as the book presents an unusual method of character assessment. I hope it will provide stimulus for further research and literature. Lastly, I would like to acknowledge my peers and editors, especially Radhika and Indrani, who reviewed and worked tirelessly towards the current edition. I would like to acknowledge my research associate Ananya for her inputs. I am thankful to my friends Badri, Neha, Negi and Gautam. I am grateful to my mom Shivani Uppal, who continuously encouraged me to take up this project. I am also thankful to Deepthi, my beloved wife, for her immense support. I am grateful to various members of IIM Lucknow, especially Professor Ajit Prasad, who provided motivation to complete the work. Without their contributions, this project would not have been possible.
Introduction. Sun. Do ostriches bury their heads in the sand when they're scared or threatened? Father. No, it's an optical illusion. Ostriches are the largest living birds, but their heads are pretty small. If you see them picking at the ground from a distance, it may look like their heads are buried in the ground. Nonetheless, they do dig holes in the dirt to use as nests for their eggs. Several times a day, the bird puts her head in the hole and turns the eggs, so it really does look like the birds are burying their heads in the sand. Sun. Oh, this means the ostrich creates an optical illusion, possibly intentionally, that makes the viewer seem as if it is hiding its head in the sand. Wow, that's an ostrich paradox. According to the Oxford English Dictionary, a character is defined as villainous if his or her actions or motives are considered evil towards other individuals, nations, societies, environments, or the universe as a whole. The essence of this book lies in the etymological and colloquial development and popular establishment of this definition. Although today the term villain is used only in a pejorative sense, originally, it defined entirely different phenomena and characters. The etymological development of the term villain follows this order. Villa, villainous, villain. Or villein, villain. The first two terms of the sequence villa and villainous descend from Latin and mean country mansion and farmland bound to the soil of that mansion, respectively. Subsequently, the French term vilain refers to a person of less knightly attributes, one who was usually employed as a peasant, slave, or farm hand. In the Middle Ages, the French aristocracy was mostly dominated by men. In order to safeguard and monopolize their women, they propagated the physically laborious villeins as impolite and unchivalrous. They used various vehicles such as literature and executive gatherings to alter the meaning. The etymological development or deterioration of the term villain continued as various other pejorative meanings, such as despicable, shameful, morally corrupt, knave, scoundrel, boor, and finally, criminal, were added to it. The process of degradation of a phenomenon is not unique to the science of etymology. Scholars of sociology and cultural anthropology have acknowledged such degradations at a macro-social level. For example, the degradation of the Vaishyas and the Shudras through the complex process of verticalization.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?